This is VOA News. I'm Michael Brown. Six U.S. Democratic presidential candidates traded arms with each other in a tense debate late Tuesday, attempting to make the case to voters in the farm state of Iowa that they have the political fortitude and skill to take on Republican President Donald Trump in the November national election. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone said national security came up early in the debate.
There was quite an effort by several of the Democratic contenders to criticize President Trump's actions on Iran. Joe Biden, for example, saying we've lost our standing in the region, that many of the allies now see the U.S. and Iran on the same level, sort of an equivalence that he said is a problem for the United States. And of course, it opened up, though, Biden's judgment on the Iraq war, Bernie Sanders reminding everyone he voted against it, Sanders, while Biden voted for it. And then Sanders expressing concern, as did Pete Buttigieg, that perhaps what's going on now with Iran could lead to a wider conflict. There were also clashes over health care. We've seen that before. How costly a health care reform package do you want? And also over some trade deals coming up with China and with the United States, Canada, and Mexico. So the Democrats had their scrapes and their irritations, but in some ways it was not quite as boisterous or aggressive as many people thought going in.
VOA national correspondent Jim Malone. U.S. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said the impeachment trial of President Trump will begin early next week. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said the House will vote Wednesday to send the official impeachment charges to the Senate. The Republican-controlled Senate is widely expected to acquit Trump, particularly since no Republicans have expressed support for removing him from office. For more news, join us at voanews.com. From here in Washington, this is VOA News. Thousands of participants from more than 100 countries, along with heads of state and government and business leaders, will gather at a forum next week, the World Economic Forum in Switzerland. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from the forum's headquarters in Geneva.
The World Economic Forum is celebrating its 50th anniversary this year at a time of great uncertainty. The forum's founder and executive director, Klaus Schwab, warns the world is in a state of emergency and the window to act is quickly closing.
We do not want to face continued political and economic disintegration. We do not want to reach the tipping point of irreversibility on climate change. And we do not want that the next generations inherit a world which becomes ever more hostile and ever less habitable. Just think of the wildfires in Australia.
Discussions about the de-escalation of hostilities and instability in the Middle East are expected to loom large during the week-long discussion. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The U.S. Census Bureau is planning hundreds of ads in 13 languages for the 2020 count. We get more on that story from the AP's Ed Donahue.
The goal is to make sure every household responds to the 2020 census.
According to us, it's about participation.
A multi-million dollar campaign covers all forms of media.
The 2020 census gives us the opportunity to support what's important and allows our voice to be heard.
The head count starts next week in rural native villages in Alaska, but the rest of the country won't be able to start answering the questionnaire until mid-March.
Everyone living in their home on April 1st counts.
The Census Bureau says the questionnaire can be answered online, though people will still be able to do it by phone or by mailing back paper forms. Ed Donahue, Washington.
And the European Union is taking a closer look at green investment. We get more from Lisa Bryant.
The EU would designate one quarter of its budget to fighting climate change over the next decade. The $1 trillion price tag would come from a mix of EU and national government funds, as well as the private sector. It targets the EU's ambitious goal of ensuring greenhouse emissions reach net zero in 30 years. European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen, who late last year announced that goal, a plan she calls the Green Deal, says the investments are for the climate as well as EU citizens.
It will be invested in a huge transition ahead of us, which consists of upskilling people and new jobs, clean technologies, green financing, new procedures.
Von der Leyen aims to have the climate legislation adopted by March. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
And I'm Michael Brown, VOA News, Washington.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today's Wednesday, January 15th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Sudan's capital, Khartoum, was reported calm overnight following uprising on Tuesday by former security personnel.
Since last night, there was a heavy fire exchange between the protest group of the National Security and the Sudan Armed Forces, jointly with the Rapid Support Forces.
That's reporter Michael Atit in Khartoum. Cameroon bows to pressure from Chad, truckers, and dismantles security checkpoints. Nigeria pays tribute to slain soldiers with support for their families. Ghana debates the right to information law. And the leader of anti-government protest in Liberia is arrested in Sierra Leone and says he will be killed if he is returned to Liberia.
I got some help from very top-level security people in the Liberian security apparatus. They came to me and they said, leave the country. There is a plan to assassinate you.
Henry Costa is one of the leaders of anti-government protests in Liberia, and Gambian police denies protest permit to a pressure group. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Sudan's capital, Khartoum, was reported calm overnight following uprising Tuesday by former members of the National Intelligence and Security Service. The soldiers shot their weapons in the air in a pay dispute. Their agency is being disbanded, and they were supposed to either join the Rapid Support Forces, a paramilitary force whose commander is a member of the transitional government, or be dismissed. Reporter Michael Atit is in the Sudanese capital, Khartoum.
Yesterday morning, people just started hearing gunshots all over, especially in some headquarters which are located near the Khartoum International Airport. So people were terrified with the gunfire and were running up and down. So upon this development, the government in Khartoum issued a statement and tried to cool people down and tell people not to be near military barracks. And the authorities of the Khartoum International Airport did also suspend all flights coming in and taking off for 5 hours. And then again, they renewed another 5 hours. Since last night, there was a heavy fire exchange between the protest group of the National Security and the Sudan Armed Forces, jointly with the Rapid Support Forces.
Michael, this uprising led by the former members of the once National Intelligence and Security Service. So what exactly are their concerns, and was the government able to meet or satisfy their concerns?
This incident began actually when the government decided to pay their benefit. And according to the Deputy Head of Sovereign Council, General Hamdan Begalo, who is also the head of the Sudan Rapid Forces, he did a press conference last night in Juba and said they did, despite the economical situation Sudan is going through, that they did allocate money for these groups so that they are paid and they are disarmed and they are sent home to their families. And he actually pointed some fingers to a former military intelligence Saragosh of being behind this group and trying to use this group to cause havoc and to cause disorder within the town.
So as you mentioned, this former military intelligence person, Mr. Ghosh, was he or anyone arrested?
Ghosh, he is actually on run because the attorney general here, they opened a case against him here. And according to the judiciary officials here, he might even be deported back to Sudan through help of Interpol. There are charges put against him here in the court of law, and he should be arrested or deported as soon as possible to the town. Up to now, there are no reports of any arrest yet.
I'm interested in knowing, what are the views of people in Khartoum about the possibility of having a military intervention again?
James, the views of the people in Sudan in general, not only Khartoum, they have experienced 30 years of military rule, which has been categorized as dictatorship ruling. And during this recent revolution, they mentioned clearly that they actually wanted a civilian rule. And that is what took them some months to negotiate from the civilian position group to negotiate with the military council by then. And it took them some months to reach a final agreement. So a normal Sudanese today will not accept the return of any military to rule Sudan again.
Michael, thank you very much again. We're so happy to speak with you.
Thank you, James.
That was reporter Michael Atit in the Sudanese capital, Khartoum. Cameroon has bowed to pressure from truckers and is dismantling security checkpoints from the Central African state port city of Douala to the landlocked Chadian capital, N'Djamena. The truckers had for several weeks protested what they say is rampant corruption and extortion from drivers. Edwin Kinzika reports.
Cameroonian truck driver Ngaibai Basiru drives his semi-trailer carrying building material out of the Ngaoundere truck stop in northern Cameroon on his way to the Chadian capital. Ngaibai says after grounding his truck for 10 days, he and 90 other truck drivers decided to resume deliveries because authorities in Cameroon are dismantling some of the illegal checkpoints that extort money from him and his peers.
The difficulty that we have always rencontré sur ce corridor Douala-Bangui-Douala-N'Djamena.
He says what made them very angry and stopped transporting only basic goods like food and medication to N'Djamena was that they were spending up to $500 to pay their way through the many illegal checkpoints between Douala and N'Djamena and a similar amount on their way back. Basiru said truckers were surprised that after complaining to the government several times last year, the number of checkpoints increased and the money collected from truckers skyrocketed. The truckers began their protest on January 2. I.C. Issa, vice president of Chad's National Trade Union of Truck Drivers, says Cameroon should not only dismantle the illegal check posts, but should also make sure people who create such posts are punished.
On a demandé 15 contrôles qui n'ont pas ordonné.
He says the government should make sure the police, gendarmes and customs officers who mounted the illegal checkpoints answer charges in courts of law. He says the dismantling of 15 unauthorized control posts in a distance of 70 kilometers within 12 hours indicates how truck drivers were severely exploited and that they are ready to indicate to the governor so many other illegal checkpoints where transporters are harassed to give money without receipts. Kildadi Tagioke Bukar, governor of Cameroon's Adamawa region, where Ngaoundere is found, supervised the clearing of the checkpoints. He says some of them were created by Cameroon security services for what they described as strategic reasons, but that such reasons cannot undermine a decision taken by Cameroon and Chad to regulate transport between the two countries. In January of last year, Chad and the Central African Republic dispatched senior customs officials to Cameroon to look into the problem of the illegal checkpoints. Chad and CAR businesses threatened to start importing and exporting goods through Cotonou in Benin, although Douala is the nearest ocean gateway for the landlocked countries. In March 2019, the transport ministers of Cameroon and Chad signed an agreement recognizing only one security checkpoint on the road between Douala and N'Djamena. Cameroon's Ministry of Transport says it has reduced the number of checkpoints along the road by 75%, and officials have promised to dismantle the rest. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Ngaoundere, Northern Cameroon.
Today is Wednesday, January 15th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Daybreak Africa time, 14 and a half minutes past the hour. Sierra Leone authorities have arrested the leader of the anti-government protest in Liberia. Henry Costa was expected to be extradited to Liberia today, Wednesday. But Costa, who says he was being held at Longi International Airport, says he fears he will be killed if he is returned to Liberia.
I'm currently at the local police station at the Longi International Airport in Freetown, Sierra Leone. And I had attempted to board my flight to Istanbul, Turkey, and then to the U.S. The immigration folks got alerted when I tried to check in, and they called me up very nicely. And they've been very nice, very professional people. And they raised an issue that there was information sent by the governor of Liberia or some source that I needed to not be allowed to board the flight. The immigration officer brought some police officers who accompanied me to the police station. They've been very nice to me. So I'm being held under protective custody. It is not the same as being arrested, but of course my rights to move freely are curtailed, but I am not arrested, but I am held under protective custody at the police station at Lungi. And so I guess you're wondering, why did I come to Freetown? On Sunday.
Exactly, Henry. That's what I wanted to ask you, because when we last spoke, you had said that the authorities in Liberia were preventing you from leaving. How did you end up in Sierra Leone?
I got some help from very top-level security people in the Liberian security apparatus. They came to me and they said, leave the country. There is a plan to assassinate you. We know you can be stubborn, but please do not be stubborn about this. We know about this plan, and we don't want to sit here and allow it to happen. Actually, three of them, they facilitated my escape out of the country. Mr. Baltic, that is how I came to Sierra Leone. The elements who have been hired by people close to the president to assassinate me. Mr. Baltic, 2 days before the protest was supposed to be held on the 30th of December, I got a call and I went to a meeting from a very important diplomatic mission near Monrovia. And they informed me of a plan to assassinate me. So I've been aware of that plan and I've been protecting myself. But it gets to a point where you have to be very, very careful, and sometimes you cannot be stubborn. And so that is how I left, Mr. Baltic.
We were trying to reach the Sierra Leone police or any authority in Freetown. We were unable, but why would Sierra Leone want to return you to Liberia? Because I'm not sure if there's any criminality involved here.
No, sir. There's no case in the court, sir. There is no case in the court against me, sir. I have not been charged with anything, sir. Nothing of the sort. But as I said, the Sierra Leone authorities have been very reasonable, very warm, very pleasant. And so I hope when I meet their bosses tomorrow, we will be able to square this thing out. Because there's been no indictment, no prosecution, nothing. So I have not committed a crime. But Mr. Baltic, that's the reason why I made the move. Because I was warned to leave the country. My escape was facilitated by senior government security people. I will not call their names.
Suppose Sierra Leone insists on returning you to Liberia. What are your concerns?
That I would be killed if I were to be returned, Mr. Baltic. I would be killed. So the Sierra Leone authorities would have to know that. I will make that very clear to them.
Henry Costa is one of the founders of the Council of Patriots, organizers of anti-government protests in Liberia. He was speaking with us from a police cell at Lungi International Airport in Freetown, Sierra Leone. Nigerian authorities have been battling the Islamist militant group Boko Haram for a decade in a conflict that has cost the lives of an estimated 35,000 people. In a ceremony over the weekend, Nigeria marked Armed Forces Day by remembering the soldiers killed in the battle against the insurgency. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
The special remembrance event for troops took place in the Nigerian capital, and with smaller ceremonies in states like Borno, Adamawa and Yola, the epicenters of Nigeria's decade-long war against the Boko Haram insurgency. During the event in Abuja, about 200 widows of fallen soldiers and their relatives received food and financial support. Like many of the women, Olubunmi Adetunji's husband, a soldier, was killed while fighting Boko Haram in Maiduguri in April 2016. Since then, the Defense Ministry has been helping her care for their four children.
I thank the Defense Headquarters and the Army Headquarters for what they have been doing in my life. Because since then, 2016, I don't know how much they sell rice in the market. They provide rice, provision, and they give even the school, the children, sponsorship. They call us every year to pay the sponsorship.
The concert to honor fallen soldiers is tagged Tribute to Our Heroes, and this is the maiden edition. Top Nigerian entertainment stars, musicians, and comedians were present to perform at the event. Leri Osonyin Tolu, a personnel official of the Defense Ministry, says the ministry plans to make it an annual event.
The aim of this project is to let you know that the future of Defense Staff, Armed Forces of Nigeria, and indeed the nation at large, have not forgotten you, and that you are never alone, as you are always in our prayers.
Nigerian authorities are battling a decade-long insurgency by the Islamist militant group Boko Haram. An estimated 35,000 lives have been lost, including military officers at the front lines of the battle. Security expert Kabiru Adamu, who heads an Abuja-based security consulting firm, says events like the concert are good for boosting morale and inspiring confidence.
The insurgency has been waging for about 10 years now, so I think this is a very good development. There are issues regarding the relationship between the military and the public in the locations where they are fighting. So this type of morale boosting activity like the concert, I think it's a very good development.
As the military continues to battle Boko Haram, millions affected by the fight who are living in camps are hoping to return home. Meanwhile, families of fallen soldiers remember their loved ones and hope the killing will soon come to an end. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja.
Gambian police say they will not grant protest permit to a pressure group calling for the resignation of President Adama Barrow. The police cited what they called pressing national security and public safety concerns as reasons for rejecting the permit application. As Pandero Umbaya reports, the pressure group says it is determined to organize a protest march later this month to call for Barrow's stepping down from power.
The police press release was first featured on the Defense Ministry Facebook page. It was posted late Tuesday morning. The Inspector General of Police said the proposed protest march wouldn't take place as scheduled. He notes that security assessment, monitoring, and intelligence gathering was conducted, and the police therefore have decided to withhold the granting of permit to the Operation 3 Years Jordan movement. Lawyer Yankuba Jabo is one of the leaders of the 3 Years Jordan movement.
We do not think that the police have power or have authority to deny citizens their rights, which is enshrined in the Constitution. So the Constitution said Gambian citizens have a right, or every citizen in this country have a right to peaceful assembly and peaceful demonstration.
The police command said the police would continue to deliver on its constitutional mandate of protecting life and properties.
What the police have done, they claim to be acting under the Public Order Act, because that is the subordinate law which we applied for the permit under. And acting under that law, they have now exercised powers beyond which that law has provided them with, or afforded them with. And that is to deny us of that constitutional right.
Dabo says his group will organize a meeting to discuss the police decision. He maintains that the scheduled protest march is still on schedule. He reaffirmed his call for President Barrow to step down from power and organize early elections. Dabo has called on Barrow to honor his campaign promise and relinquish power for the sake of safeguarding Gambia's transitional government. Pasamba Jau is a Gambian human rights activist. Jau believes that the police decision was undemocratic. Jau has accused the police of discrimination. Yankuba Dabo claims that his life is under threat. He vows that he's ready to die for Gambia's freedom. For VOA Daybreak Africa, this is Pan Derimbay reporting from Raleigh, North Carolina.
The Media Foundation for West Africa has questioned the government of Ghana's preparedness for implementing the new Right to Information law. After 2 decades of trying, Parliament passed the law last year, placing Ghana among 22 other African countries that have adopted similar laws. Now, 125 countries across the world have the Right to Information laws. Mavis Ochery has the report from Ghana.
The law passed last March establishes mechanisms to meet the constitutional right to information that public and private institutions hold. It seeks to foster a culture of transparency and accountability in public affairs. The bill originally was drafted in 1999 and came before Parliament in 2010. It took 9 years for a final vote. Implementation was delayed until this month to give public institutions the time to establish information officers and hire staff to facilitate the release of information to the public. Fozietu Al-Hassan is a program's associate for the Media Foundation for West Africa. She says the government has not done enough to create awareness of the law to ensure smooth implementation. She says the lead implementing agency The Information Ministry has not done many of the necessary tasks, such as appointing a commissioner of information and hiring staff yet.
Now, the question we are all asking is, are we really implementing the act? Because we are in January 2020. But the things that we said we were going to do, the information officers said we were going to recruit, it's not done. The awareness is not done. The commissioner is not appointed. The commission members are not there. The funds that we said we're going to allocate to the commission to support their work, we haven't heard anything about that. So I think that, yes, we want to implement the law, but we are not ready.
Fuziatu says government preparedness is essential for Ghana to implement its right to information law more successfully than some African countries such as Nigeria, Sierra Leone, and Uganda. She says since Nigeria passed the bill into law in 2011, its government has seen requests for information decline, in part because about 38 requests were denied.
If you look at Uganda also, they adopted it, I think, in 2005 or so. And since then, they've also had issues of information refusal, people sending the information. Either they don't get the right information that they are requesting for, or they just deny them. And in some extreme cases, they have to take the case to court. And so it makes it very important for us to learn from this.
She says government institutions must be proactive in disclosing information and should take advantage of the existing structures the country has to comply with the law instead of waiting for its full implementation. Reporting for VOA, this is Mavis Autry in Ghana.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of African news. Sudan's capital, Khartoum, was reported calm overnight following uprising Tuesday by former members of the National Intelligence and Security Service. The soldiers shot their weapons in the air in a pay dispute. Their agency is being disbanded, and they were supposed to either join the Rapid Support Forces, a paramilitary force whose commander is a member of the transitional government, or be dismissed. Sierra Leone authorities have arrested the leader of the anti-government protest in Liberia. Henry Costa is expected to be extradited to Liberia today, Wednesday. But Costa, who says he was being held at Longi International Airport, says he fears he will be killed if he is returned to Liberia. Gambian police say they will not grant protest permit to a pressure group calling for the resignation of President Adama Barrow. The police cited what they called pressing national security and public safety concerns as reasons for rejecting the permit application. Cameroon has bowed to pressure from truckers and is dismantling security checkpoints from the Central African state's port city of Douala to the landlocked Chadian capital, N'Djamena. The truckers had for several weeks protested what they say is rampant corruption and extortion from drivers. And that is it for this Wednesday, January 15th edition of Daybreak Africa. We invite you to join us again tomorrow for more Africa news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Barty in Washington, wishing you a very good day.
The 62nd Annual Grammy Awards Show is coming up. To celebrate, Border Crossings will play songs from the winners of the 2019 American Music Awards to refresh you on some of last year's best tracks. Tune in to hear from your favorite artists like Post Malone, BTS, and Taylor Swift, January 23rd on The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa. The Voice of America's Straight Talk Africa puts you in touch with newsmakers and experts as they talk about the most important social and political issues that affect you. Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.